Welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, where we talk about the best of times, but also pay respect and learn from the crazier times. Our presence matters. Take a ride with us as we show the world how we make our presence felt. Fatherhood is Lit.
What's good, Fatherhood? This is James Lopez representing for the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, and I want to thank you all for your continued support. Keep hitting me up and letting me know what you need to hear and from who so I can make it happen. There's so much dad-inspired content out there that today I had to bring on one of the OGs in the game, Glenn Henry, a.k.a. Belief. What's good, Glenn?
Yo, what's up, man? I'm so glad to be a part of what you're doing, bro.
Oh, man, I'm honored to have you here, bro. You're one of the OGs.
Hey, man. <laughs> What's up?
The OGs in the new space, bro.
Right. Like, I don't feel like I'm an OG at all, but I guess technically I am an OG. So.
Oh, that's that humble stuff, man. You know, is that humble stuff. I get it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man. So, first thing, you were rapping before, right? So do you want me to call you Glenn or do you want Belief, bro? What are we doing?
Everyone asked me that. So, you know, when you call me Belief, I know that you know me from music. If you call me Glenn, I feel like you know me from my life. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, whatever you feel comfortable with, I'll respond to both. I feel like there was a metamorphosis in my life that, you know, where like a transition occurred and I became like a person, like even the Glenn that believed in himself more. Mm-hmm. So Belief was just appropriate after a certain time. Either one, it doesn't matter.
All right, cool. So, you know, you've been representing big time for the dads that look like us for years now, a couple years, right? A few years.
It started in 2015, so about 4 years almost now.
Yeah, in this game, you know, time moves so quick that it kind of makes you the OG, bro. 4 years, man? That's pretty quick in this internet game. So, you know, I wanted to bring you on here and I wanted to talk about how your belief in fatherhood has gotten you to where you are today, both in business and in parenting. Is that cool?
Yeah, of course.
All right, so let's do it. So let's start with this statement, man. How was your day today? How was your feeling towards that statement changed since leaving your old 9-to-5?
You know, it's not a question anymore. Mm-hmm. Because before it was like I left home, and you're referring to the TED Talk. So you're referring to the TED Talk and me coming home from work, my wife asking me how was my day, and me kind of like getting this sense of anxiety because I had to think about work again, which is something I hated doing because I hated my job. And so, you know, at this point, you know, my wife knows exactly how I'm doing because she's with me most of the day, you know? And so my day can be described by all my children. Thank God. You know what I'm saying? It can be described by my friends and my family because I'm present in the day, you know? Mm-hmm. Work is different. It's hard. You know what I'm saying? Like before, I hated it. Now it's just more challenging because, you know, you started out as a content creator and you make videos and you learn how to use a camera and learn how to edit and you learn how to do music and you learn how to do things that help you be a successful YouTuber, not knowing that there's a tsunami coming behind you that is like, oh, you're actually a business owner, CEO, and you run a media company that people want to advertise on, you know, that Fortune 500 companies want to advertise on. So the pressure is on, and I'm addicted to it. So I went from a place where I hated my job to where I love my job, but it actually creating can be addicting.
Mm-hmm. How do you think you got like that though? Was it like, how did you mentally prepare yourself for that? Was it something that you were always addicted to or did you like kind of learn to love it?
No, usually when a sushi chef is behind a sushi bar, right? You like sushi?
Nah, man, I don't do fish, but I get the analogy.
Okay, cool. So when you go to a sushi bar, right, and the sushi chef is behind the counter, he's making the sushi. It's an art to that. He makes that art, he puts it on a plate, and we take it, we eat it. not knowing that while you're eating it, he's watching you to see your reaction. There's this instant gratification that we as a society really love. We really look forward to, especially as millennials and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so I have noticed that before in my other job, I wouldn't ever see the gratification when I, you know, when the product hit the market or when the product hit the, you know, the customer, I wouldn't know what happened. I just knew that I was doing a job from the bottom, you know what I mean? And that somebody was getting paid off of this. So it was beneficial.
Yeah.
With me, with creating content, I instantly, as soon as I upload, there's like, oh my gosh, I just completed something. And then there's another level to it that says, watch, like, see the views, the clicks, the comments come in and the likes. And it's like, it actually feels like a hit of like an injection of some type of like, you know, vitamin that's like really like dopamine, you know what I'm saying? That like hits me and it's like, oh my gosh, this feels so good to see people reacting off of something I just made while I was in my boxers. You know what I'm saying? Like, I never got dressed today. You know what I mean? And it's just like, the addiction became like, I really just love being productive, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you didn't think you had that with the 9 to 5? Is that what caused you to like hate it?
No, absolutely not. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like you work and it's like, depending on what you're doing, you don't know the why behind what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very few jobs that tell you the why. You know, I worked on base and I was issuing gear for Marines and military personnel. And so I would issue the gear and take in the dirty gear and then send the dirty gear back and ship out the dirty gear and bring in the new clean gear. You know what I'm saying? It was like this job. And, you know, ultimately, you know that you're serving these people, you know, to go and do their jobs better and fight. But you're also a constant irritant because you're not in there for customer. It's like weird. It's just like, depending on the job description, you know, you're an adversary to the customer, you know, especially if you don't know the why.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and I guess with that example, you could kind of tell the difference between, you know, fatherhood and that, where it's like here you're doing it for like a service to others, right? While at home you're changing those diapers and all the dirty clothes, but it's a service to your child, which makes you feel a little bit better, right? Where it's like, yo, I created this, I'm making this, like I'm in charge of this,
right? So it's like, you know, it's 1,000 times better because the why goes so deep. It's like levels of a why. Right. Like, why are you a good father? Like, why do you try so hard and try to be so intentional as a father? Like, you try because you love your children and you don't want to make the same mistakes, or you don't want to not be able to apologize for some of the mistakes that you've done. You know what I'm saying? And so your why behind why you parent the way you do is one thing. And then how that actually speaks to your spouse is another thing. Then how that speaks to your community is another why. So other people watching you parent. And then it's like, if you make content, it's like you're providing a value for a whole nother group of people who is really none of their business, but they get to partake in something that they can enjoy. You know what I'm saying? So the why can go super deep. And so I have so much value in why I do what I do at this point.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I mean, I think that's what life is about. You know what I mean? And that's what I preach, especially with the entrepreneurship side, especially now with the internet the way it is, where almost you know, anybody could do what you're doing, anybody could do what I'm doing. It's just how well do they do it and how much do they want it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, everybody can't do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've seen a lot of people try to do what I do, and it's not so much what I do, it's like the chemistry that my children and I have. Like,
they're
just funny.
Yeah, you're not forcing.
Like, I'm not sitting here like, okay, say this now. You know what I mean? Like, the kids are just funny, man. You know what I mean? And what's cool is the editing and the comedic timing. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if your fans are like The Office or something like that, then that's where I kind of like line up with the comedic timing. But like, you can make it what it is, but everybody can't do it. So the fact that if you can do it and you're doing it, then it just makes it all the better.
Yeah.
But I do believe that there is a lack of representation in fatherhood that everyone can do it differently. You know what I'm saying? So like, I'm doing YouTube in a certain way. Like, somebody will try to do exactly what I'm doing and they're not actually called to that. They're called to do it with their, you know, where they're cooking with their kid, or, you know, they're dancing with their kid. It's just different. You know what I'm saying?
So you think that it's still early enough that there's a lot of space to just like define your own lane in the fatherhood space?
Oh, absolutely. It's wide open. Like, it's wide open because it's just becoming hip, like, that dads are, like, super active, you know what I mean, in the past 5-6 years, you know. And I would say a little longer than that, but at the same time, it's like people aren't really, they're like, they're not against, like, fatherhood being, like, when they see a dad out with their child, it's not like, oh, my gosh, like it used to be.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I feel like it's way wide open for other men to get involved and like just try to create something, whatever they want to do, you know, for their kid.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure in the beginning, like, you know, when you started like taking it more serious, right? And you see these, mm-hmm. these other dads come into the space and they just do like some wild things that make them go viral, right? Like in the beginning, you probably looked at them and said, I don't know how they did this. Like, how is this possible when I've been doing my thing for so long? Like, how did you mentally overcome that feeling?
Yeah, you know, there's, you know, I carried a lot of that over from hip hop. Hip hop is very competitive. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, I'm in a group with two other guys and I'm like, I'm better than all y'all. You know what I'm saying? And we're on the same team, but I'm trying to be better than all of them, you know? And then anybody else is like, you're trying to be better than everybody. You think you're better than everybody. And so when you see somebody get promoted to a position that you think you deserve, it infuriates you.
Yeah.
And so I had a little bit of that coming into fatherhood because I was like, man, I could do this. Somebody could jack my style and they could go viral for it because the internet don't care.
Yeah.
Like the internet don't care who was first. You know what I'm saying? Like virality, you know, is like, you know, it just don't play fair. And so I used to get really upset about that. But then I had to like really walk through the process of a creative. And virality is like the point that doesn't matter anymore. Like as a creative, and I talk about this in my Patreon like keynote that I gave last year, I talk about the stages of release, right? And so when you have a stage, like when you first release an idea, the first stage it stands on is your mind. And in your mind is lit, right? So in your mind, you have an idea to make a microphone that hangs from the ceiling. And it's the most amazing idea ever. And then your mind gives over to your ability. And you realize that you have no ability. You don't know how to hang a mic from a ceiling or put wires into the wall. You know what I'm saying? So you tell a friend. And then that's the third stage of release, right? So it goes all the way to you tell a friend, you release it to your audience, and then you go, and then for some reason it goes viral. At the viral stage of releasing your content, it's none of your business. It doesn't matter. You can't control it. People come along who are big fans of you. People come along who are haters who never should have saw your stuff. It just doesn't matter. But once you give the product away, it's not yours anymore. So all I need to do is keep creating stuff, like letting my brain give my ideas to my ability working with it and giving it to my audience. What happens from that point on is none of my business.
Yeah, I mean, I agree big time because I think, you know, people get caught up with the vanity metrics. And it's like, you know, you could go viral, but you might not have longevity because you might not be any good. Like you might do one little silly stunt and it pops. But then when that brand comes calling, you don't got anything in order.
Yeah, you can't recreate that magic.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like that it's like a flash in the pan. And so I hate going viral, bro. Like the first time I went viral, I sat there and I didn't do anything because I was just watching the numbers go up. And I was like, babe, it's at 40,000. Went to the toilet, came back. Babe, it's at 53,000. And I just sat there in my drawers. I didn't create anything. I just watched the numbers go. And it was like, here I am sitting here. Like what I need to be doing is keep putting fuel in the fire, you know?
Yeah, so at that, like, at that moment where you're thinking like, yo, we about to be stars here? Is that what happened? Like, did you get jerked a little? Like, was it false hope there?
No, it just was like, you know, it's just like a false hope. Like, you go viral and then what? Now what, dog? You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't matter. Like, just keep putting out the content. Keep doing what you're supposed to do. And so I got over, like, that fear of competition, like, that whole competition, just knowing that, like, honestly, like, I am called to do this. Like, this is my responsibility. And I don't care about going viral. I just care about the 12-year-old kid who tells me he wants to be a dad because he saw one of my videos. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's all I care about, is those, like, those deep connections, not the many, the quality deep connections. And so you can't even look at in any other dads as with jealousy, because you know that I'm called to my people and you're called to your people. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can speak to people in different ways. I can't speak to people, bro.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to reach a whole different community. Y'all like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you guys like to get together and do stuff as a family. I don't like to go outside. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's different. It's different. You know what I mean? And so I'm called to make, like, have a production type situation, and like make stuff in a hub and put it out, you know, come up with ideas and write songs and come up with concepts and ideas, and put those things out. Other men are called to actually go in a community and be the hands and feet of someone's life. There's another guy who's not getting any recognition, who's just in the Big Brother program and taking care of somebody's son.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fact. I mean, there's a lot of people doing groundwork that are not known at all, and they're killing
exactly.
it. Exactly. Killing it.
But we need them. We need them to play their position.
Yeah, and sometimes the community needs them more than they need us.
Yes.
Which is crazy. And I think that's like, it takes a long time before you understand that part. You know what I mean? Before you believe that. Because we gas ourselves up to believe that, you know, we're the only thing popping out there. It's like, nah, yeah, man, there's other people.
I know better. You know what I'm saying? I know better. You know, a lot of times, man, I'll be like, somebody was like, man, it seemed like you and the Illuminati, right? Because,
because you remember, bro? You remember?
Yeah, so everything was happening, and it was like, I can't say I did anything to make this happen. Like, it had to be God, because, like, from my son just randomly being chose as, like, that iPhone billboard. Mm-hmm. Like, that had nothing to do with my brand.
Oh, wait, you didn't go search for that deal? You didn't put in an application? None of that?
Absolutely not, bro.
What?
They
Get
found
out of
my,
here, bro.
They found my picture. I'm telling you, they found my picture on a hashtag.
Get out of here, dog. Do you remember what hashtag they used by any chance?
Shop on iPhone.
Get out of here, man. That's insane,
I'm serious.
Bro.
I'm serious. And so, like, Cass be like, yo, who's your son's agent? And my kid's cute, too. How can I get him on a commercial? And I'm like, bro, I don't have an agent. Disney hit me up and they asked me to come out to be on this thing. Mm-hmm. No, like, I had a friend who worked on the set and they were like, oh, you know who would be dope with this is Belief. And they looked me up and they're like, yeah, send him out. See how much he charges. Like, everyone thinks that I'm like in this, like, you know, like somebody's working PR for me or something like that. It's just not like that, man. And I'm just trying to tell you that certain people are called to certain things, and I don't know what to say. Like, I don't know what to do about it.
So for you, it's more about, let me just keep pumping out the content that I like, and hopefully
for me,
good
it's
things
like,
happen.
Yes. It's like, let me just keep doing what I know I'm supposed to do. Right. So, okay, here's a big point, and everyone should know this. You have to find your audience. Everyone says that, right? That's so cliche. But you have an audience that you have chosen, and then you have an audience that has chosen you, right? Mm. So I thought my audience was dads, other dads who were going to be like, yeah, yo, I need to be a good dad, so I'm going to watch this good dad. My most valuable person who watches my channel is someone who does not have a child yet, because they're watching it against their fears to become a child. I mean, to become a parent.
To be, you think it's necessarily to become a dad, or is it mixed between fatherhood and motherhood?
And motherhood, because they're trying to figure out how to choose a husband. They're trying to figure out, like, what kind of man are they going to end up marrying? You know what I'm saying? So it's both. And the crazy thing is, my audience is 70% women.
That's wild, man, because it's like, that you threw me off there, because to me it's like I boast sometimes that when I look at my metrics, my audience is about 90% men, and it's like, yo, you know, like, this is a fatherhood site, I got men looking. How does it feel on the flip side then? Like, what is it? Are they the consumers, or are they the buyers?
They're the ones who need the most proof.
The ones that need the most proof. I break that down some more.
All right. So they the black woman needs the most amount of affirmation that fathers are valuable.
Okay. Okay. Damn, because that sucks.
And we are taught as a black people that the mother is the leader, the head, the provider, the constant source of affirmation, the source of encouragement, and the dads may stick around. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
And so when you have a black father who is super present and it's all of those other things, like, not that I don't let my wife run things, but I'm also very heavily opinionated and present in my life, in my children's life and in her life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They see that and they're like, why is this dude so active? Why is he so about this life? And they're just trying to understand, you know? And so the cool thing about having a large amount of women as a support or as people who, you know, value the content is that they give the most feedback, they comment the most, and they are tribal. So women have more of a notion to be involved in the community. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
So
they will come through. They'll be a part of your Patreon. They will comment. They will give affirmation. They will love. They will support. And they will tell you when they're pissed.
So how did you target them? Like, how did that even become?
That's what I'm saying. Is like, I didn't target them. They chose me.
And then you just started looking at your metrics and you just realized that, or was that just through like the comments and, you know, the feedback?
Well, like the feedback is like this. They're like, yo, I like you because ... Right. And a lot of the feedback was like, yo, I like you. I like your stuff because you're a black father and you like spending time with your kids. And other people were like, yo, I like you because, you know, you represent God and you're a Christian. You know what I'm saying? Other people were like, yo, I like you because, you know, you speak your mind on certain things. You know what I'm saying? And as long as and that's like the biggest thing I get. So as long as I'm doing those things, I can do whatever I want.
So you know,
I can go to Disney World. I can, you know, as long as I'm speaking to my base, which is like, I'm always going to talk about, I'm never going to shy away from the fact that I love God. I'm never going to shy away from the fact that I'm a black father, and I'm never going to allow people to get away with murder in my life. You know what I'm saying? And I'm always going to fight for the underdog. So as long as I'm always doing those things, if I get to the point where like, yeah, man, I don't think God real at all. People going to be like, wait a minute. This is what we stood on here. That's why people was tripping off of Kanye West. Because it was like, bro, like, what you mean, like, slavery is da-da-da-da-da?
Yeah.
Slavery is a choice. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, you, the whole time I was sold into this idea. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, man, do you understand that?
Yeah, no, I get it. Because my thing is, like, a lot of times when you know, especially, like even dads or any market, when they have a customer that they weren't really trying to reach, and now that becomes the majority of their customers, they start to change their content or the way that they speak. They start like switching it to like appease them a little bit. And when I see the content, like I see it as, yo, a male could actually watch this. It's not being like, you know, twisted and turned to fulfill a female's eye. So how did you maintain like you? Like, how did you not sway from what you do?
Yeah, it's mostly, I mean, I really can't call it. I think it's it's authenticity and then like my own artistic style. So I don't know why women watch. Like, I mean, I can't tell you exactly why, but when I talk to them and I ask them sometimes, like if I meet someone and they're like, I love your channel, da, 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 and I ask them, I say, can I record you? And I just ask them random questions. And really what it is, you know, it's this book called Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller. The book is amazing, but basically he talks about how every story in the movie is basically the same, you know, from, Luke Skywalker, like Star Wars, you know what I'm saying, to, you know, any other movie, Batman, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a hero and there's a villain and there's a guide. Mm-hmm. We think that our brand is the hero, but our brand is actually the guide. The listener is the hero.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
So that sums up the book. If you haven't gotten this book, bro, I would get it on audio book. It's a freaking amazing book, bro. And so he talks about the value of being the guide. So you have to realize what you are helping your listener, your customer vanquish. Mm-hmm. Like, who's the enemy? You have to be able to identify the enemy in the situation.
Okay. Now that's dope. You know, I think that's, so that's, that goes into like your brand building, right? I think one of the,
right.
the harder things after that is actually monetizing on your brand. So is there a book that you read that sort of like fixed your head a little bit? Because like for me, it's like I like to jab, jab, jab. I like to just give and just do the impossible, right? When it comes to, mm-hmm. to now, yo, I need this X amount of dollars to compensate me. That becomes a little challenging. So is there something that you read or somebody that you listened to that made you say, all right, now it's time to keep these lights on?
Man, you know, it was time to keep the lights on way before, you know, it was time to keep the lights on. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. When I got 2 years into this, or I guess it was like a year and a half, my wife, you know, had our third child, our daughter, and she was like, listen, she just basically stopped looking for a job. And didn't tell me, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? So I was like, look, man, like you the breadwinner, you the math teacher, you know what I'm saying? Like you the one that make all the money and the insurance. So are you going to look for a job or not? And she's like, I don't think so. And so she went from like not believing at all in what I was doing and like being irritated that I would take out the camera to being like, yeah, man, I think you're good. I think this is what you're called to do. You'll figure it out.
Fully vested.
So I'm like, okay. So, love the vote of confidence, but I'm like, yo, I'm kind of stuck out here. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And so, this is around a time, like we had that iPhone billboard, mm-hmm. That was circling around and I got on the phone with Gary V and oh, Gary V.
Ooh, I remember you know that.
Yeah. And he basically was like, I was like, look, man, how do I monetize this? How do I make this make sense? And he was like, yeah, man, if I were y'all, get a job.
Yeah.
Like you need to get a job. And I was like, I don't think you understand like my situation, bro. Like I refuse to work with someone else. I hate getting a job. And it was like, literally it was all fake, bro. Cause I was like, I know that I cannot work another job. Like I can't work for someone else because I don't believe in anyone else's ideas.
Mm-hmm. You just knew that like, for a fact. Like, yo, this is me right now.
And the reason was, is because I was a good worker. Like I hustled for people. I'm just like the pit bull, like the enforcer that came in and got stuff done. When I was doing music before that, when I was in that group, I was a DJ for Ruslan, who's a rapper out here. And then I was a DJ for my brother-in-law, John Gibbs. He got, you know, Ruslan owns his own record label. John Gibbs got signed to Interscope Records.
Okay.
Like I was like the dude who was on tour with them and doing like DJing for them and taking pictures and cutting hair. And like, I was just that guy. And then I realized like, they will never, like, at one point I realized they would never go hard for me like I was going hard for them. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I was like, I have to go hard for myself, especially if I don't want my children to grow up thinking that they need another man's approval to be successful.
Okay.
Yeah. So
it hits your head. Once it hits your head, like once you get that stuck in your head, you can move forward.
I was hurt. Uh-huh. I was hurt, bro, like, because I love those dudes. Like, I felt like I was betrayed. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Like, you know, some situations happened and I was like, man, like y'all will never go hard for me like that. You know what I'm saying? I was like, I got to go hard for myself. And I just kind of was like, all right, it's a wrap, you know, it's over. And so I stopped doing the rapping thing. And I realized at that point, I was like, I have to make this happen. Cause I saw like Casey Neistat. I saw like, you know, and I realized the fatherhood game was wide open, you know, LaGuardia yeah. Cross.
And it still is.
You know what I'm saying? And so, but like, it was only LaGuardia Cross and me. And when I started, LaGuardia was like, man, I was about to stop doing this until I saw you, bro.
What?
He was like, yeah, he was like, man, like I literally was going to stop doing this because I hadn't seen any other fathers doing it. And it just wasn't making any sense or any money. And so he was like, man, you really just gave me hope. That was in 2016, like right in January.
Damn, I think that's the, like, was, right. I think that, was that the year we did Dad 2.0?
That was the year we did Dad 2.0, bro.
That's crazy. No.
Was it?
I'm not sure.
I think it was a year after that, bro. I think it was. That's I think it was 17 though. When we did that 2.0. Yeah,
that's still crazy because that means it was just like just starting.
Yeah.
So you gave him hope.
Yeah, that's what he told me. You know what I'm saying? And like, it was like literally like there was nobody out here but me and him. And he took off after that. You know what I'm saying? Like he just kept doing his thing. You know what I'm saying? And took off. And you know, part of me was like comparing myself to him at one point too. You know what I'm saying?
That's a killer one like, right there though. The comparison game.
You know what I mean? Like it'll jack up your head, man. Like, you know, pride will really get with you and jack up your head, man. So like, I don't know, man. It just became really evident to me that I was called to do a certain thing and I couldn't let anyone stop me. I couldn't work for anyone else. And I had to prove it not only to myself, but to my wife and my family. You know what I mean?
And then you started chasing the deals after that or like after the 2 years? You started like putting plans in motion?
All the deals hit my inbox.
Get out of here, bro. So you never created like a pitch deck, nothing?
I created it because that's what I was told to do. But like first it was like As I Am hit me up. They're a hair company. They paid me like $900 to do an ad for them. The ad got like 6 million views. Like across all platforms, and I was
for
like,
"Man, I know bucks, that's good
worth,
Lord.
Bro." I was like, "I know that's worth more than $900." So I was livid. Oh, y'all trying to take advantage of me?
I mean, but I think that you know that before we continue on, I think that's what's what happens to a lot of people in the game right now, where it's like they got the business and the influencer side kind of like mixed up or intertangled a little bit,
yeah.
Where they look at it and they yeah. say, "Yo, I'm cool with a $25 flat tummy tee post." And it's like, yo, yes. You cannot keep your lights on like that. You need to do 1,000 yeah. of those to make some money.
Yeah, yep.
So then you and get a $900 one and say, yo, like, man, y'all just use me for my community, damn it.
Exactly. So we made magic together that first time, and I refused to work with them again because I was like, man, because, you know, they work with another creator, and I knew what that other creator got paid, and it was way, like, 10 times more than what I got paid.
Oh,
and
shit,
my video
man.
Did better. So I was just was like, oh man, like I have to take this seriously. And so I like worked really hard for about a year, tried to do it on my own. And then a year later, like I was stressed out, freaking out. This was after the TED talk. And I hit up Maggie, who is now my brand manager. And she's like a friend of mine. I used to, I was like her big brother back in the day when she was like in church. And she was like one of the youth there, and I was like one of the youth leaders, and she grew up and got a degree in PR, and now she works for me. And, you know, I got her all her other creators that she works for, you know what I'm saying? So she's literally like a brand manager for like 6 other creators, but she negotiates all the brand deals because she used to work for a company on the opposite side. And so she knew what the budget was, and the creators were always asking for like $100, even though the budget was $1,000. Mm-hmm. So she came in and was like, look, I brand with us up, and they're like, and they hit me up and be like, hey, we'd like to work with you. Like, bro, I'm gonna tell you this. Last year, BMW was in my inbox since September, and I ain't respond till November because I thought it was a joke.
Oh, you thought somebody was just messing with you?
Yeah,
you thought one of your people threw that at you?
Apple, yeah, when Apple hit me up, when people from Apple, they were like, hey, you know, we're gonna pay you, you know, dirt cheap basically to use your photo for that iPhone thing, but it's gonna be up. I was like, yeah, whatever. You know what I'm saying? I got the check, and then my homies driving down the freeway in Florida and was like, yo, I just saw a big picture of Theo on the side of a building. And I was like, word? And he was like, yeah. He was like, I'm gonna turn around the freeway and take a picture. And then all of a sudden it just kept popping up. Bing, 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 bing. And I was like, oh, that was real. And then I went back in my email, and it actually really said that it was gonna be in the World Gallery. So when someone BMW hit me up, they were like, yo, we want to work with you. We want to work with you for the holiday season. We want to work with you for the holiday season. I'm like, yeah, all right. And I ain't say nothing. And so they hit me up. It's like, hey, are you seeing this? Like, we really want to work with you. So I sent it to Maggie. Maggie hit them up, and they were like, yeah, we want to give you a BMW. We want to pay you. We want to. And like, literally, like, bro, that was like the biggest deal I ever had. That's the deal that allowed me to pay off all my wife's school loans.
Yeah, that's the one that you were actually using one of their cars, like a, what was it, like a X3 or one of the bigger cars, right?
Yeah, it was an X3. They gave it to me for a month. I used it. I made some dope content for it. They loved the content. They paid us fast on time. And it was like, I realized that, oh, okay, like this is the new way to this is the new way to meet, to meet, like, this is the new way to advertise. So all these people have, you know, numbers and good engagement, and people are following them and they want to see their posts, but they're just doing stuff for free content or free gear or, you know, a free ticket somewhere or an opportunity. Like, I'm not doing anything for an opportunity. It's not worth it.
Yo, I'm not going to lie, man. Like, you know, before I started Fatherhood is Lit, I used to run a tech business, a tech entrepreneurship company, a media company called The Fast Startup, right? And, you know, you learn all of these lessons about vanity metrics and about the short dollar. When I started Fatherhood is Lit, bro, I took every single influencer deal that landed in my pocket, and they were dirt cheap, like $250, $350 for a post.
You don't know better.
And I didn't know any better, man. And now, yo, they don't even waste their time calling me anymore. Cause it's like, after I told them no the first couple times, instead of just telling them no because they kept, you know, they kept coming back, it was more like, no, how about we do this type of job? And it was like, all right, that's not what we're looking for. And yo, I feel so much better. Even though I'm losing out on those couple hundred dollars here and there, yo, I don't even want them, man. Like, it was corny of me to pimp out my community like that. You know what I mean?
And that's what I felt. And that's what you're doing. It's like, you don't realize that you're actually devaluing the whole industry.
Yeah.
And now when you take those deals.
Yeah. Now when I see like a competitor or somebody in the space doing that and they get their money, it's like, yo, I applaud you. You know, I applaud you. You got your $100, your $200 for the ad or whatever, but that's, you know, you can have that. I'm not competing with you. You know what I mean? And it took a while, man. How do you tell somebody new to the game to say no then?
You know, you really can't, man. It's all, they won't listen to you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like they it's almost like you got to learn. Like, so once here it is. Once I learned how much my friends were making, I was like, oh no, I'm not doing that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't realize I could make that much, you know? So I'm not going to tell you any names, but like, I was working for this thing. It paid like $1,200. And I found out one of my friends who had, like, at the time, I think I had like 20,000 subscribers. They had like 80,000. They were getting $10,000. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, you're getting $10,000 to post the same thing I'm posting. Like, so at that number, at whatever your number is, I'm going to be worth what you're worth. Mm-hmm. So I just was like, oh, I just got to get my numbers up. And I know that it's possible to get paid this much. So that's what I'm going to charge.
Mm-hmm. And then you got your numbers up, and it translated to that?
Yeah, basically. Okay. You know, I knew that once I hit 100,000 subscribers, brands would either hit me with real numbers or they wouldn't hit me at all.
So you think that's the magic number, 100K?
It was. Mm-hmm. Now, not anymore.
What is it? What do you think it is now? Do you think it's lower or higher?
Because
they talk a lot about like the micro influencer, and that's how, you know, that's how I get a lot of my deals.
Yeah, I think now it's more about Instagram and the lower numbers, like, you know, 10 to 50K. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like that's a better number. That's a better deal. You know, my wife has amazing engagement. Her engagement, her numbers are way better than mine. And I have, you know, 40,000 more subscribers than followers than she does on Instagram. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But she gets way better opportunities on Instagram. But I create better content for other companies. So they'll pay me because I can create the content and they can use it on their own platform and it can live on their space and it looks professional.
And it has your touch. Yeah.
Yeah. And it has my own touch, my own voice. It has my kids on there. You know what I'm saying? It's really hard to find, like, you know, dark skinned kids who, you know, minority kids who are comfortable being on camera and who don't like get awkward in front of the camera. You know what I'm saying?
It's very difficult. And sometimes when you got a kid that wants to do that, they could be very embarrassing too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think
monetization is
hard, bro. The key though is making sure everyone, like, you have to kind of share your numbers. Mm-hmm. You have to tell, like, yo, don't do this, you can get this much for it.
Oh, you mean so, like I guess for easy terms, like the OGs in the game should be telling the younger people, yo, these are my numbers? Or do you think the younger people should be asking them? Oh, not the younger people, but the younger businesses, right? Or should they be going up to you, yo, Glenn, like, show me your rates?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, it's not just like, hey, yo, boom, show me your rates. It's like, yo, am I worth more than this? Like, what is my worth here? And then someone else will be like, listen, like, I wouldn't do a deal like that. Like, I talked to a guy yesterday who has an amazing brand. He just doesn't have the numbers yet. He's literally a retweet away or the right follow away from his whole platform blowing up. Mm-hmm. And a church wants to hire him, and they want to pay him a part-time salary to do his brand from their church. Because he's in a dire situation and very thirsty to survive, he's willing to throw his whole brand away for $20,000 and a $600 rent. So $20,000 isn't a lot of money, but it's way more than he has right now. So he's willing to sell his whole brand for it. Oh my goodness. You know, if you listen to hip hop, like, I know that what I'm able to do is probably worth $5 or $6 million. Mm-hmm. Like what I'm able to accomplish on my own. All right, so put it to you like this. We both know a brand, right? A fatherhood brand who has wild numbers, like super big numbers.
Yo, you said that, it's like bing, ding, ding.
yeah, right? So we both, right? And so they say their numbers, and I'm exaggerating. Say their numbers are 1 million, right? They have 1 million followers. So they come to me and they say, hey, we want you to create content for our brand, and you'll get the credit for it, but it'll go on our channel and you get access to our 1 million followers. Well, and I say, well, if I got the juice and I got the content, you're actually competition to me. The only difference between you and I is 1 million followers. But the only difference between you and I is a year or two.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, if I'm patient, I don't have to work for you.
Yeah. No, and there's other factors too, because companies like that, sometimes they get in the game and they get investment dollars, right? If I'm thinking about the same company, and they also use tactics where what I'm getting from this interview with you is that you came out and you were creating content that was true to yourself, right? And you weren't trying to use the tactics of let's say, you know, jump on Instagram and like 100 people and follow 100 people. Then when they follow you, you disfollow them or you unfollow them. You know what I mean? You're not doing those tactics. And I think that's the difference. That gives you the mental space to say, yo, I could be better than them in a year or two. Because I see the other parts of the business. Like, the world don't see this, but I know this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like, I just know the value of what I'm doing, like the time it takes. Like, when people's like, yo, I'm gonna do what you do, man, I'm gonna try it. And they really try it, it's real hard. But like I'm in a position where I have really good relationships with producers who make really good music. You know what I'm saying? So I get custom production for my videos. That's really hard to do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then I rap to the videos, and I'm decent at rhyming. You know what I'm saying? And then it's like the way I edit the content and the way, like, all that stuff is like, that's a nuance that is hard to just recreate. You just can't do that. Mm-hmm. It takes a while. I didn't realize that hip hop was training me for this.
Yeah. And then you messed all of it together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it takes a certain story to be able to do that type of stuff. And I think so many people would just give their stuff away because they need, you know, short-term monetization. And I did that too at one point, man. Like, you know, MCNs, multi-channel networks, you know, they got this thing where they take advantage of YouTubers. They'll come along and say, hey, we have a relationship with Huffington Post, and we have a relationship with this company and this company and this company. And all you have to do is give us 40% of your YouTube ads, and, you know, we'll get you in on these platforms. And I took the bait because my manager at the time, who was my music manager, who didn't know who he was talking about, like, gave me advice to go, you know what I mean? Like, go along to have other people working for us. And basically they were like, I wasn't making any money off AdSense. So I didn't care. But then, like, a year later, I started making a lot of money off AdSense. but they were taking 40% of it.
Mm-hmm. They were robbing the bank.
40% in it. Yep. So they were taking 40% and investing it in the larger creators. Mm-hmm. And they weren't giving me anything. They wouldn't even pick up the phone when I called.
Yeah, they just use your content and then use you as a piggy bank.
Exactly. So it's like, it's so many different things, you know what I mean? And so it's like, it's not about the companies. It's not about making the money. It's about finding your people, man. Your people will always take care of you. Remember when I got my car got stolen?
Yep.
My car got stolen and like we were just kind of ass out. And then somebody started a GoFundMe and, you know, allowed us to get through that period of our life.
Yeah, the tribe came through.
Exactly. It wasn't enough to buy a car, but it was enough to like change the locks. And like, you know what I'm saying? Like get us through a really, really, really tough season and let us to rent a car for the next, you know, for a little bit and, you know, just chill. Like it gave us some space, you know what I mean? To survive during that time, man. And so I'm thankful for that.
No, that's huge, man. You know, I've taken a lot of your time, man. So I want to wrap this up. But the last question I really have for you is, it's more on the hip hop side, right? You spoke about that call with Gary, right? Where you could have taken it the wrong way and said, "Yo, this dude is hating on me. He don't know nothing about me," or you could have taken it as motivation, which it seems like you took it as, right? Now as you do these Spectrum, you know, I saw you on Spectrum. I saw the commercial. You know, I seen you on Disney. I see you everywhere now. Yeah. How does that feel knowing that somebody like Gary V told you, "Yo, go get a job"? Like, how does it feel that you did it your way and it's working?
Well, you know, Gary V is not an enemy.
No, he's not.
You know, he's not.
No, he's not.
He cares. Like that dude really does care. Like he's an opportunist and a hustler. Like, you know what I'm saying? For sure. Like don't get it twisted. Like
I learn from him every day, bro. And he's a friend, exactly. So you know, I can't throw too many shots at him.
Nah, not at all. Like so one thing you got to know about that dude is that he's on your team. The only thing is like, he gave me an ultimatum. He was like, you either go get a job or you hustle your face off. And I decided to do the latter. But what Gary, you know, can't account for is God's favor.
Facts.
You know what I'm saying? Like he could not account for what God's plan was in my life. And so even taking advice from Gary makes no sense when I know where my, like who I'm responsible to in the end. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, Gary V may be like the hustler's hustler and the entrepreneur's entrepreneur, but like God, like really had a plan. You know what I'm saying? So it really didn't matter what Gary said.
Yeah, I think we all get caught up in this where it's like we have access to somebody really dope like that. And we ask a question that we already know the answer to because we just want the validation. And sometimes the answer that they give us isn't what we were looking for, but we still do our thing anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. But yeah, Glenn, man, you know, thank you so much for your time, man. How can people find you, man? I don't think there's too many people that don't know about you right now.
Man, you know, belief in fatherhood. I've been taking a break for the past month. I start back up on October 3rd. We just did a dope interview with Kev on stage and Melissa on stage from the Love Hour podcast.
Ooh,
that's dope. Coming out next week. It's already up on their platform. But where we talk about like the life of an influencer, which is a really dope conversation. But yeah, like I think that if you guys want to just, I mean, like you could find me all day. You may not be called to me. I may not be called to you. But if you could just serve in your local community, whatever that means, if you're a father, like love on the people around you and really represent what manhood looks like. You know what I'm saying? In your own way. You know what I mean? And you can really change somebody's life by just being present. You know what I'm saying? So don't worry about following me. Like, you know, follow, you know, serve your community. You know what I'm saying? The best thing you could do for sure.
Yeah, man. I always tell people, man, presence over presence. You know,
amen.
And that's what it's about. So thank you, Glenn, man. You hooked our Fatherhood is Lit community up, showed them why they should always believe in fatherhood no matter what happens. So I appreciate your time, man.
And to of course, bro. Anytime.
And to the community, you know what to do. Keep making your presence felt. You're too blessed not to. Fatherhood is Lit.